Hi, my name is Lisa Portland, and I'm a compulsive overeater. Oh boy, am I a compulsive overeater. I was fat the majority of my life, except for when I was in OA. I'm a 100-pounder several times because I kept leaving the rooms. Sorry about the noise out there. And I didn't really leave. I stopped making as many phone calls and meetings, and then I found myself that I, like, not even a member. And then I picked up. And you know what? I'm gonna have to text my family soon, because if that doesn't stop, can you hear that noise? Maybe not. Oh, good. Thanks, Cindy. Anyway, oh, I can. It's hard to believe, unless you go to 100-pounder meetings, that people can gain and lose 100 pounds multiple times. But trust me, walk into a 100-pounder meeting and you'll hear it again and again. My first diet was at age 8, my first official diet. My mom and I were just like, if I would get skinny, I would be happy. You know, like, do depressed kids get fat, or do fat kids get depressed? You know, it's like there's a bi-directional relationship that we know now, but we didn't before. And so she spent a lot of money, and I was grateful on all the different diets that we tried. My mom has a great body. That was not really easy for me to have that role model, right? So when I was 8 and I was on my first official diet, that pay and weigh, as they call it on Zoom, I realized I was dieting since way earlier than that. I was an only child. There's eating disorders on both sides of my family, and everyone was looking at me, my body, and what was going in my mouth. And you know what? I say I was a fat kid, but if you look back, I was muscular and not skinny mini. I was chunky, but you know what? In my mind, I was fat. And by the time I got to 11th grade, I was really fat. I was hot in 9th and 10th grade. I don't know how that happened. And then after that, it was downhill. They talk about, in the big book, they talk about the real alcoholic, right? Well, I'm a real compulsive overeater, and I didn't really understand what that meant. Except now I ended up being one of those people, the big book thumper kind that I used to roll my eyes at. Rolling my eyes is contempt prior to investigation. You know, it's like I'm judging you before I even look at the situation. You know, one finger pointing at them, three fingers pointing back at me, right? And so what I learned is that there's a moderate alcoholic, where I'm just going to do a guy and a girl. The wife says, "Oh, I don't like when you drink," and then the guy just stops. Boom, takes it or leave it. There's the heavy drinker, where they might have gotten a DUI, they might have lost their job, they might have some liver involvement, they might have gone to treatment, but they stop. They stop. They can stop. And then there's Bill, the real alcoholic. Nothing, no. And this is for me: no medical consequences, no social, emotional, physical consequences, no diet, guru, therapy, meds, nothing. No human intervention could have helped me. When I look at the moderate eater, they're the people that, like, my jeans are getting tight. I think I'm just gonna, like, watch what I eat. And I'm like, oh my gosh, there's people like that. Like, what the heck? Okay. That's the moderate. And sometimes our rooms have moderates in them, but if you go to the Kim G First Step workshop, you'll hear that we have a lot of heavy eaters in our rooms. And heavy are the people that, have done diets and exercise. They've done all the interventions, the human interventions, and they worked. They worked. Including what they call frothy emotional appeal, which for me was like, don't you want to see your child graduate high school? Don't you want to, you're a medical professional. What's it like? Do you think it's good to be fat? None of that frothy emotional appeal worked, And so that stuff might work on a heavy eater. Then there's me, right? Nothing works. I'm the real compulsive overeater. So if you see people introducing themselves like that, that's what it means. Like, nothing could have fixed them. Like, I wouldn't be in a spiritual program if a physical or emotional solution would work, If you ever go to other meetings and you see a box, our boxes are black here, but if you see a box that says, "I abstain from leaving OA," it's because that's my motto. I left several times. I had the promises. I had, everything that we're promised, everything that we're a spiritual awakening, which is basically a psychic change where I looked at everything differently. Everybody seemed different. I was different. The world was different. My desires were different. I wanted to help others and I wasn't as selfish. And everything changes with a spiritual awakening, which again is just a psychic change where things are different. And usually sponsors will notice it in their sponsees before the sponsee notices it. Just a plug for sponsors and sponsoring and what have you. We have a glut on the market of sponsors right now, which is unusual, but so many people got recovered in Zoom that it's a buyer's market for sponsors right now. And there are meetings. I go to a meeting that there's 40 people looking for sponsors. You know, if you make outreach calls, they're going to, oh, do you need a sponsor? And I just say, oh, I just tell my people, just no, thank you, not now. But I'm asking, what do you think I should ask a potential sponsor? Because sometimes we find out what we don't want, like in relationships. Well, I don't want that again. So some people are finding that out in sponsors. Oh, I don't want that again. So, you know, from the rooms, we used to really like sort of vet our sponsors and we kept them for a long time. Well, people are changing sponsors a lot right now. So we made a meeting on Saturday night to help sponsors be sponsors and help people that are working with others. Everyone's welcome. We have a major speaker tonight. I can't tell, I'm not supposed to tell you names, but you'll know who she is. And she's recorded. She's one of our circuit speakers. And then we have two people, we have Q&A, and then two people from the group will respond. So what it was like was I learned that keep coming back, it works. Keep coming back was like a jingle in my head. I'm from San Diego. Oh, by the way, I saw that you're from Salinas and Monterey and Santa Cruz. Like, I feel like I'm in a beautiful location right now. Like I zoomed into this gorgeous location. I am from San Diego. There's really strong OA there, thank goodness. And I still left, you know, I still heard like the jingle. And now I hear don't leave. So I abstain from leaving OA. And that's what's in my little box if you see me with the boxes. You know, I was thinking, I learned a lot through the big book. I came in 88. I was 24. I'm 61 now, no math. And I got 8 years. I had 8 years of good recovery. And I would say the best thing about that was I had a spiritual awakening. Let me tell you about this one. I don't know how this happened, but I used to think that people that believed in God were weak-willed and spineless, and it was a crutch. And I'm here to tell you, if it's a crutch, I want one under each armpit. I want my crutches, you know, I just, oh my gosh. And so, you know how they're like, oh, thank God for OA. No, like thank OA for God. I did not have a higher power until I made it here. And let me tell you, when I made it here and I saw steps 2 and 3 with the G word in it, I was like, I'm never going to make it. I was crying. I'm never going to make it. How am I going to get to 12 if I can't get past 2 and 3? The good news is, it just says we have to be willing to believe, okay? And really, the big book is really clear. I love the OA literature too. We only had the big book back in the 80s and in the early 90s, but then we got OA literature and we were like freaking out. It was so great. First we had the 12, and then we had the 12 and 12. We have visitors if you hear a dog. And the in-laws, which I like my in-laws actually, and that's because of recovery. So, and oh, it's a celebration up there. So in the meantime, you know, I have CRS, which stands for can't remember stuff. So I have no idea where I was. So feel free to unmute and tell me, or, so I don't know. I'll just keep going. I don't know. Well, you know what, if you're listening, there's a pause. Okay. I wanted to say, oh, I'm going to talk big book. So I had big book in the beginning and I had those 8 years. And one of the best things other than finding a higher power was that I was abstinent before my pregnancy, during my pregnancy, and for the formative years after my pregnancy. And it's so funny. Like my daughter has no fat bias. Like her husband goes up and down in his weight. She doesn't even notice. She's like, you know, I don't notice. Like I'd be in the mall and I'd say, is her butt bigger than my butt? And the person would go, no, your butt's so much smaller. Cause I always thought I was bigger, you know, I mean, always. And then I would think they were lying to me that my butt was smaller, you know, I just felt I was huge, you know? So anyway, we loved the OA literature. It was great and fantastic. My recovery was still good. However, when I came back this, I have 7 years now. I can't went in about 2 months. When I came back this time, it was all big book. And I'll tell you what happened. I saw these people getting better and getting better fast. Like they came in miserable, like seriously miserable. And like in about 6 to 8 weeks, they were like different. They had that glow, they had that look. They just had it. And I'm like, who are these Stepford wives? They all look the same, you know? And then I realized I was saying step, like Stepford wives. I'm like, who are these people? You know, they all like, it's just weird. And I wasn't ready to drink that Kool-Aid. I just thought, like, I don't know, man. You know, they're big book thumpers. And then, of course, you know, I became one because the best way for me to believe in something is to go in as a skeptic. And then I'm like a total believer, right? Is this going to work for me? I don't know. So I drank the Kool-Aid. And it worked, man. I got more promises than ever, ever, ever. And what's interesting is my life is really small now. And it was really, you know, the big house, the career, the whole, you know, you know, that was one of the things being fat is I could still get the car, the career, the house, the kid, that, you know. So, but I hated all of it. And I hated you. Oh, I hated you. But I hated me the most, you know. And so, I don't have any of that anymore, but I like me. I actually love me. People would go, oh, you'll hear this in the rooms. We're gonna love you until you love yourself. I didn't think that was gonna happen. I was like, you guys, don't hold your breath, okay? I'll let you know when it happens. And then it happened. It happened. I'm telling you, like, I don't even know how to explain it because I always beat myself up. I hated myself. I would never tell you. I pretended I was fine. I was 200 pounds, but I could help you with your problems. Yeah. I was like Dear Abby, right? Where does Dear Abby go? I think Dear Abby went to the bottle, I'm pretty sure, you know? And Lisa went to the food. And you know what? Thank God the food worked for me, or I'd probably be a heroin addict. I'm serious. Like, seriously, if food didn't work, well, and luckily it stopped working, so I made it to the rooms, right? But if it didn't work for me, I would have kept progressing in any kind of addiction, any kind of, you know, food, sex, spending, shopping, gambling, you name it, I would have done it, you know? Also, how I come back when I come back in is not because I'm fat, right? I told you I knew how to be fat. It's because my life is so unmanageable. Actually, it's unbearable. Now, interestingly, when I take that first bite, my soul dies before I gain 100 pounds, you know. Really, like, things are unmanageable, like, pretty quickly after that. But I can handle a lot of pain, right? I'm a compulsive overeater. I can handle a lot of pain. You know, a lot of us had a yucky childhood, and my parents were screamers and fighters, and thank God they split up. But you know, that's rough being a kid from a split up family and eating disorders on both sides. And my situation's not nearly as horrible as other people, but you know what? My stuff is the biggest in the world because it's mine, and yours is the biggest in the world because it's yours. So I have no idea what I was going to say. Something about how our past was, and I don't know. There you go. Probably about the big book. All right. So I'm going to tell you what I figured out this time around. This last time. Listen, I'm going out in a body bag. Okay. Hopefully not soon. But this is the last time here, okay? If you don't see me, my number and my email's in the chat. You call me, you tell me to get back to OA. But really, like, I'm so involved now with so much service that I think people would notice, you know? So, and that's one of the things I want to tell you is if you don't see someone around, please call them. I can't begin to tell you I've called people that I hadn't seen in a long time and they don't come back. And then, like, months later, they come back and they call me and say, you know what? You didn't give up on me, and I'm here. I'm like, see, you don't even know. We don't even know what we're going to do is going to make a difference. I've had people really pissed off at me for the honesty that I gave them on the phone, and they call me back a while later and say, you know, I wasn't ready to hear it, but thank you. We never know. We never, never know. And, you know, as far as being honest, you know, there's Harlan G says, I'd rather have an angry friend than a dead friend. You know, don't let people just slide. I didn't want anyone to let me slide. And I was dying in the rooms for a while. You know, I really was. Not anymore, thank goodness. Oh, and I want to tell you something funny. So I see 5 minutes left. My sponsees and I, they pick a meeting, like some random meeting, and we go to it. sometimes nobody shows up. Sometimes there's two ladies that used to drive an hour to see each other every week and have dinner. And so my sponsee and I go, nobody, they don't know we know each other. And we kind of bring the message and leave our phone numbers. We're not missionaries, but, you know, we're kind of, you know, carry the message. In fact, that's what this Saturday night meeting is about, you know, carrying the message, tradition, you know, tradition five, step 12, the preamble, Roseanne's prayer, the pledge. It's all about carrying the message too. That's our primary purpose, right? Anyway, so I'm going to tell you something that I found out through the doctor's opinion. The doctor's opinion is in the big book before you even get to like the chapters. It's Roman numerals. And so the doctor's opinion basically explained to me that I have this allergy from certain foods, right? With alcoholics, they can't drink alcohol. For me, I can't eat certain foods. I eat, trust me, just like they drink, but they drink, you know, coffee and soda and tea and water, right? So I eat. Oh, yeah, I do. But I don't eat this and that and this and that, right? And they have behaviors they might not do, like they might not hang out in bars. Well, I don't like hang out in bakeries. I don't go to fast food restaurants. I don't go to 7-Elevens. I don't do hand-to-mouth eating anymore because that was a total a muscle memory thing. Like everything I binged on was hand-to-mouth, cookies, candy, chips, fries, pizza, you know, it was all hand-to-mouth. And so now my apples I cut up, everything I cut up, it's fork and knife, baby. Not really a lot of knives, but it's forks and spoons. So anyway, I found out, I thought that my crazy mind made me eat. No, it's that bite of that allergen that causes the crazy mind. That's the allergic effect, is I get the obsession of the food and that makes me eat more and more. Well, I didn't realize that. I thought it was my obsession that made me eat. I never stopped long enough to realize that it was the actual food that was making me eat. You know what I mean? I just didn't know. And now I know. And it's hard for us. We have to figure out what our alcoholic foods are. And we don't do that alone. Oh, we can't. We're not honest, man. I would be like, oh no, I can have this. Yeah, just a little bit. And the doctor's opinion talks about entire abstinence. So like an alcoholic can't just have, you know, booze on New Year's Eve and his birthday, right? I always say his, but their birthday. And I can't just have cake on my birthday and cake on New Year's Eve, you know? Oh, I forgot. I'm not supposed to mention. Well, you know what? It is what it is. It just happened if I mentioned food. In any event, I learned about entire abstinence, but I had to figure out what my alcoholic foods were, what my allergens are with another person. And you know what? Things pop up. Like sweet potatoes, I never had a problem with sweet potatoes. And about 3 years in, I'm like, oh, man, I got to go to this store to make sure they have the kind I want. I got to go to this store to make sure. Oh, I wonder if this farm has different ones. I was going crazy. If it spends too much time in my head, it doesn't belong in my mouth, you know? And so that happens. And so I have to, you know, SSDD plus, same stuff, different day, plus a little bit more. So I have to do the same thing that I knew that worked to get me here, but I have to do a little bit more progressively because my disease is progressing. So my sponsor's like, okay, meditate 1 minute, you know, for a week and then, or a month or whatever, and then like up it to 2 minutes, like nothing major, you know, she made it really easy for me. So, so yes, SSDD plus, that's one of my mottos, because I'm telling you, if I don't do the stuff I need to do, I have like the most amazing grandkid. He's 4 years old. I don't care if you have a grandson, mine's the best in the world. And so if I don't do what I'm supposed to do in the morning by 10 o'clock, I can't stand him. And I really just can't stand myself because I'm not in fit spiritual condition. I want to pull my hair out. I feel like I'm going to get a bald spot from pulling my hair out if I don't do SSDD plus. And so I don't want to mess up my grandkid. I don't want to do that, you know? So I have to stay in fit spiritual condition. And just one more thing, you know, we'll ask people, you know, why do you think you relapsed? And they'll go, oh, my dad died, or I got a divorce, or I lost my job. Actually, what we found out is that the reason we relapse is because we're not in fit spiritual condition. Because you know people that lost their dad and got divorced and lost their job and they stayed abstinent, because they were in fit spiritual condition. And it says in the big book clearly that if I'm in fit spiritual condition, my body and mind will settle down and work out and heal, and my life will heal, and I'll be able to handle what comes up my way. And the big book's really clear. How do I stay in fit spiritual condition? Bottom of 14, top of 15, help others. That's why we have this new meeting on Saturday night that's basically helping people help others. And my time is 13, 12 seconds, perfect time, 12 seconds, 12 steps, perfect time to stop. Thank you so much for letting me share.